Futures Radio Show, sponsored by CME Group, the world's leading and most diverse futures and options exchange. CME Group's markets help individuals and businesses around the world effectively manage risk. For access to free educational tools and resources for the active individual trader, please visit activetrader.cmegroup.com.
Every day, traders and investors dive in to tackle the ever-changing markets to find opportunity. Futures Radio Show is your number one source for answers to the questions that all market participants want to ask. Veteran futures trader Anthony Crudele sits down with the most influential leaders and top traders in the industry. Now, here's your host, Anthony Crudele.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in for this episode with David Keller. Remember, new shows are posted on Mondays and Thursdays. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes and YouTube. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a review on iTunes. Before I play today's interview for you, I want to give a shout out to the great sponsors of Futures Radio Show. CME Group, Trading Technologies, RJO Futures, and Top Step Trader. To learn more about these sponsors and the important things they are doing for futures traders, be sure to click on their logos on our website. Today, I spoke with the president and chief strategist at Sierra Alpha Research, David Keller. We talked about market awareness, behavioral biases, his process for using technical analysis, and last but not least, we discussed how being a classical musician and a pilot has helped him become a better strategist. So without further ado, let me take you right to the interview with David. Dave, when I went to your site, the first thing I saw was managing risk through market awareness. And that brought me back to the beginning of my career when I was learning from pit traders. And many of them would tell me, Anthony, make sure you have pit awareness. Know what the biggest brokers and the biggest traders are doing around you because they're going to have an impact on the market. I eventually ended up calling it market awareness myself because when I went from the pit to the screen, I couldn't call it pit awareness anymore, so I started to call it market awareness. How are you using market awareness in your research?
Absolutely. Anthony, it's a pleasure to talk to you today. Looking forward to this. For me, market awareness really means two things. I think one of those is having an awareness of what's going on around you in terms of the asset that you're trading. So I find a lot of times we get caught up in a very specific narrative or a very specific trade, a very specific position and outlook. And when you do that, and when you tie yourself too much to a particular point of view, you're locking yourself in and you're preventing yourself from really understanding, really having an awareness of all the potential other outcomes that could be out there. And so, a lot of that's when you hold on to things too long, that's when you sell too early, it's when you do all of these, behaviors that just hurt your returns over the long term. So the first thing it means for me is just having a good sense of your own routine, how you fit into the world, and making sure that you have an awareness of what's going on around you. The second thing it means is maybe bigger than that, not just on a particular trade, but I found especially working with equity investors will get you'll sort of get the blinders on and you'll be focused on your holdings or your portfolio or a specific stock, a specific group. And what happens is there are all these opportunities that are happening around you and you forget to pay attention to them and you're just focused on the one theme, the one story. So for me, it's really taking a step back, and market awareness is taking a step back and having a good understanding of your environment. And when I'm working with my advisor clients and my investor clients, we spend a lot of time just approaching that. And part of it is in terms of what information you consume, how you approach your portfolio, how you approach the markets, with your daily and weekly and monthly routines. But it's also just having a good awareness of your own mind, your own mental state, and thinking of the mental blocks, right? Hit your routine. What's the first thing you look at the day? What's the very last thing you look at the end of the day? What's the order of things that you look at in other ways? And just thinking mentally how you approach your process. But for me, I found, with most of my clients, when we start talking about market awareness, we immediately uncover opportunities to improve your process. And that's what I find most exciting, I think.
Take us back to the moment where you felt this was going to be a fundamental part of your process?
Absolutely. Yeah. So two ways I would answer that. That's a great question. You know, the first off, I would say very early on in my career, you and I were talking with your, you know, with your fantastic work experience being on the floor of the CME and learning, you know, real time how the markets worked and how behavior manifested itself in market movements. I had a similar experience, not as thorough as you, but I had a similar experience going to Chicago in the early 2000s. This is when I was with Bloomberg, pretty early on in my career. And I would go to the exchanges in Chicago, go to the CME and the CBO and meet with floor traders. And my job was to help them really incorporate charts and technical analysis into their process. And I thought of it when I arrived there, I thought of it from my psychological background as thinking, you know, studying psychology as an undergrad, I was thinking, you know, market there or technical analysis seems like a great way to quantify behavior. Great. I'm just going to focus on the statistical analysis. So I was thinking a lot about the lines and when they're crossing and when they're moving and all of this and the price levels. And the moment I got to the pit and actually met guys on the floor of the CME and saw how they were interacting with each other, felt the noise of the pit rise and fall as the volatility increased or decreased, the way I thought of charts completely changed. And I think it resonated with me at another level. And I will never forget being on the floors in Chicago the first couple times and seeing traders jot pivot points down on an index card or look at point and figure charts to try to identify price objectives or identify the trends, and then seeing them put them into play in a very dynamic, volatile, very fluid, set of experiences in the pits. And for me, now when I look at charts, I go back mentally, I think, to that point where you can hear the trading happen. You can hear, the interactions, and you can hear how prices move in a way that just looking at prices as numbers on a piece of paper really doesn't get you. So, you know, for me, I think that was one of the big moments for me was recognizing how the action in the pits was so manifested in the prices and realizing you had a window into investor mindset and investor behavior directly through the price charts. I think that was key. I think the second thing in terms of market awareness was really when I started meeting with people and working with them on individual prices, when thinking about the Russell 2000 or thinking about Cheesecake Factory, this specific stock, and we talk about charts as a way to understand the how investors were thinking about a specific asset, a specific stock, and looking for all the signals and trying to identify the patterns. But I immediately noticed that if you focus too much on that one particular chart, you were somehow ignoring all the other charts, the thousands, the millions of charts you could be looking at that moment. So why are we looking at this chart of this stock right at this point? And so for me, it completely changed the way I think about market awareness, because for me, it's all about, let me take a step back and look at all the potential things I could be considering right now. What are all the levers that I could pull as an investor? Let me screen that down to the small number of really actionable things. Now let me look through that small number of actionable things and figure out where I want to actually place my bets right at this moment. And if you focus too much on the micro instead of starting with the macro, I feel like there's a lot of the best opportunities that you just leave on the table. So for me, awareness is about illuminating the activity of the buying and selling decisions and in a greater context. But it's also about having an awareness of all the different things that are moving at any one point and making sure that you're looking at the right chart or the right stock in the very first place.
A couple things. One, I love the story of you going to the pits and looking at the traders and hearing the sound increase, get louder at near highs or lows or certain moments, and how you related that back to the charts, because that really is something that really hits home with me, because I was a pit trader, not a good one, moved to the screens right away, and I was one of the only people looking at a chart and while I was looking at the pit, and it was amazing how I could see these patterns happening, making a high or a low or whatever it is that I was looking at, and seeing how the sound was changing. And to this day, I feel that energy, that rush during those certain times that I see things on the chart. So it makes me really understand that a lot of other people are probably feeling that at that moment as well. So that's a great story and how you figured that out. And secondly, for me, market awareness, what I started to really think about it as a whole in my strategy as well, don't be just focused on this one thing, this one chart, this one market, because it might be being impacted by other places. And let's talk a little bit about implementation. So we talked about how you use market awareness, but how do you then put that into your research and give that to clients?
Yeah, you hit on a great point, Anthony, just now, where you're talking about the relationships, right? So I feel like a lot of times we, as humans, we love to simplify, and that's in our nature. Like, complexity is confusing and disorienting. Simplicity gives us ability to interact with our world more easily, right? And so we love to simplify the financial markets. We love to say things like, all right, if the yield curve does X, this bank stock is going to do Y. Or if the market does X, then gold should do Y. And think of it as a simple, relatively linear relationship between two different things. But as you know, it sounds silly as I'm saying that, because that can't be the case, right? That the markets are complex. It's a complex mechanism. There are so many moving parts. And so, things are rarely just happening, if ever happening, in a vacuum. It's not like one thing will directly impact one other thing and ignore everything else out there. So for me, I feel like a lot of the work that I do with clients is helping to put things in proper context and facilitate that awareness of different relationships, identifying how things are related to one another and understanding that it's not just simple relationships. There's a lot of moving parts. So for me, I feel like one of the advantages of technical analysis, as opposed to something like fundamental analysis, you're able to look at many different assets, many different timeframes. You can scale it so well. So part of getting to my routine and how I sort of interact with my clients, it starts with a really good routine during the week, every morning, the process that I go through to sort of follow where everything is at. So for me, looking at the markets is all about identifying trends. It's all about figuring out what's in uptrends, what's in downtrends, what are in sideways, more consolidated patterns, and then trying to identify when those patterns might be shifting. What's at a potential inflection point? What's breaking out? What's breaking down? What's actionable and really happening that I think is going to cause people to rethink how they're positioned? But it's very much of a top-down process. So I try to go through global currencies, commodities, interest rates, global equity indexes, and then I dig a lot deeper into the U.S., looking at breadth and sentiment and momentum measures, and then looking at sectors, and then looking at stocks, and then trying to identify themes. And if you don't do that, if you jump too quickly to one particular thing, all right, gold is breaking out, and then just doing it all on that one specific call, you're missing the fact that that's happening at the time when all these other things are moving as well. And so that the breakout that we might be seeing in gold here in late June, that has a context of all these other things that are happening, with interest rates being low and moving lower, and with stocks, again, testing all-time highs and testing a top again, so that's happening along with all these other things. So once you have that sense of where things are at, that awareness, I would call the market awareness of understanding where everything's at, that's when you can start to think about how am I positioned in that reality, and am I positioned in the right way based on what I've just seen and what I've identified in terms of trends and inflection points. Do I have the right positions to capture the outcome that I'm expecting? And if not, that's when you have to start changing positions or changing your outlook a little bit.
You mentioned something that I use a lot in my thinking and in my trading, and that is theme. What's the theme? And I know there's a lot of day traders out there listening to this that are saying, Anthony, I just follow the charts. That's all I need to see. And that's what I'm going to trade off of. Look, I'm the same way intraday. There's no doubt, right? But when it comes to having market awareness, I think it's so important for even really short-term traders to see what the other markets that are correlating with or against our market are doing, because they could have an impact on your market. So don't just watch your chart on your time frame. Have an idea of what's happening in those correlating markets, because it definitely could impact your market. So I want to move on and talk about behavioral biases. You focus a lot on this as well. Talk to us about that.
Absolutely. So, you know, there's this whole growing field of behavioral finance that I feel like when I was getting started in the, you know, in 2000, it was still relatively, it was not very well known. It's certainly not mainstream. And, you know, most people, especially on the equity side or with hedge funds that I would deal with, they, you know, were very focused on, efficient markets theory and the capital asset pricing model, because that's what they were taught in the business school or wherever they studied finance in any way. And what's happened now, it's hilarious when you look at how widely the behavioral finance is taught. It's essentially recognizing that humans are not rational, robotic in terms of how they trade. And again, any of your listeners that day trade know that that's the case. I mean, you can tell if you've ever traded a day, you see how irrational things are, right? People are not, you know, the models would tell you that people rationally come together and, you know, decide on the right price for an asset based on all available information. And it's just not the case in the real world. So reality versus the model is very, very different. So for me, behavioral finance and behavioral biases in particular are just, it's a way of classifying and clarifying all the different sort of mental challenges we have. We're wired in certain ways for very good reason. It's for survival instinct and so that we could, you know, get food and avoid danger and all of these very primal human needs that we have. But unfortunately, they don't serve us very well as investors or as traders. And there are so many examples of that. But one of the common, you know, one that immediately comes to mind as we're talking is confirmation bias. So this is one of that I, with most of my clients, we end up talking about in great detail. And if those of you that aren't familiar, confirmation bias is essentially you have an opinion. You are bullish on the S&P, for example. What happens then is you start gathering evidence, and all the evidence that supports your bullish thesis, you find greater value in that. And anything that disagrees with your bullish outlook, you sort of mentally push that away a little bit. And all that happens is you find data to reinforce your pre-existing outlook, right? I'm bullish, and now I've confirmed that by looking at all, gathering all this information. What you should do, and I think it gets back, Anthony, to market awareness. What you need to do is not think about your positioning or your preconceived bias. Just look at the data. Just gather evidence. Your job is to bring together information and, you know, put it in a format that's going to help you understand what is the market telling me right now? What is the information telling me? And then think about how that should make me feel. Should I be bullish or bearish based on all this data that I've now gathered? And if you do that, it's a mental shift. But if you do that, you'll find that you are aware and maybe open to market changes much more quickly, because you're not fighting your preconceived bias as a result of that. So for me, working with clients, it's a lot about unpacking some of those mental blocks, some of those, and a lot of times it comes down to your process, it comes down to how you look at things, how you set up your day, how you're monitoring your position, how you're, you know, revisiting some of your successes and some of your failures recently and trying to improve yourself as a trader. There are a lot of ways that you can improve your process to help you minimize the impact of some of these behavioral biases in your trading, for sure.
I want to dig a little deeper on the markets that you do research on and the technical analysis tools that you use. First off, what markets are you primarily focusing on?
Sure. So with my previous role, I was at Fidelity Investments up in Boston for about 8.5 years. I was a managing director of research in the equity division. So we worked with all the equity mutual fund managers. And it was a fantastic place. Great resources. We managed about $900 billion in equity assets, but a ton of different mandates, short-term, long-term, a whole mix of different things. But in general, relatively, you know, long-term positioning in terms of how we're looking at the markets. So I became more and more focused on equities in particular. So, stock-specific ideas, but also all the thematic ideas that come out of looking at the equity space. So sector themes, different factor themes and all of those, and also big picture themes, market caps and global versus U.S. and all of that. But what I also learned is, as a good equity investor, you have to have a good awareness and an understanding of all the different assets that are going to impact the price of an equity. So the moment you look at airlines, you're looking at the price of oil. And the moment you're looking at, gold stocks, you're looking at gold. And the moment you're looking at banks, you're looking at interest rates. And so as a result, we sort of covered everything at macro level. So we looked at currencies, commodities, interest rates, equities, global, U.S., with the end goal of looking at stock specific ideas. How should we position based on all of this that we're seeing? And now with my research firm, Sierra Alpha Research, it's a similar sort of mindset, although I'm working more and more with advisors that are doing asset allocation. So it's a lot of thinking of how we're positioning across assets. So bonds versus stocks, alternatives versus core positioning, sort of the core positioning versus satellite opportunistic opportunistic ideas, and just how to allocate based on what the charts are telling me.
We talked about themes already. What theme are you seeing right now? Let's talk stocks and bonds. What are you seeing there?
So I just spoke to one of my mentors, this guy, Ralph Acampora, who those of you that aren't familiar has had a fantastic career, 52 years in the industry and taught at the New York Institute of Finance and essentially taught Wall Street how to use charts, how to use technical analysis over his career. He was at Prudential and Knight and other places before that. He called the current market environment a confluence of confusion, which I think is a pretty accurate way of describing it. And you think about it on, you know, again, starting with the equity markets, you have this situation in late June of 19 where, you know, the S&P 500 is testing all-time highs, which on the surface seems very bullish. That seems fairly constructive. But you're also finding that some of the leadership themes are not what you'd normally might expect. So, for example, small caps and micro caps are lagging even as the market's going to new highs. That doesn't tend to be the beginning of a huge bull run when you have the smaller, higher beta, more speculative names lagging behind the larger, more sluggish names, I guess I would describe them as. So that's one situation you have. You also have a, you know, a low interest rate environment, which, you know, appears to be just continuing for the longest time. So we had this 30-year bull market in bonds from, you know, 1980-ish to 2010-ish. Then you've had this sort of topping period of bond prices, arguably, in this, you know, all-time low in interest rates. But instead of inverting and having a bear market in bonds, you have this situation where rates remaining incredibly low, bond prices continuing higher. So I think eventually we'll see higher rates, but that appears to be delayed. That appears to be, you know, we keep pushing that down the road a little bit. And what concerns me about all this, this theme of stocks at all-time highs, but with, you know, with strange leadership themes. And also you had mentioned earlier about, you know, looking under the hood, or had suggested to me the idea of looking under the hood a little bit. You've had some days when the market goes up, but it's things like utilities and real estate that are leading on the day. And I think for those of your listeners that are day traders, I definitely encourage you, if you're trading something like the S&P or a broad index, do yourself a favor and look at some of the sector themes below the hood a little bit. So what sectors are leading or lagging on a particular day? And that situation where you see stocks going up, but it's some of the really defensive groups, staples, for example, some of those look fantastic. The fact that those look so strong in a strong stock environment is a little concerning to me. That's not what I would normally want to see leading in that type of environment. So what concerns me to wrap up is the fact that you have stocks at all-time highs with strange leadership themes. You have rates at all-time lows. And that combination is a combination that very few investors, if any, that are alive and trading now have seen before, right? And especially if you start to see rates increase and you start to see rates, you know, go higher, you start to see bond weaken. That is a scenario that most investors, unless you were born 1960 or earlier, have not seen as you've been an investor. So I think it's uncharted territory for most people, which means, I think for those of us that are trading, that are thinking of looking at the charts and identifying opportunities, I think there will be ripe opportunities for irrational behavior and opportunistic bets because people will be unprepared for some of the movements that we're going to be seeing in the coming months, coming years.
What are your favorite technical analysis tools?
It's a really good question. So, you know, I've worked in my career with a lot of technical analysts, and I have a lot of peers in the industry that I've worked with through the CMT Association and other industry groups. So I've gotten to know people's process pretty well. And also in my Bloomberg years, I would spend a lot of time at hedge funds in New York and Connecticut, trading floors around North and South America, and really just trying to understand how people use charts. And I will tell you, I learned that there are a lot of tools out there, but I always gravitated towards tools that fit two criteria. One was I thought it was a good representation of investor behavior. So there are a lot of tools out there that are interesting and might test very well in a back test, but I find it difficult to connect what they're telling you with what I'm seeing and hearing with investor, what investor psychology is telling me. So I want tools that will help me quantify that. And the second thing is I want a tool that's readily explainable, because most of my career has been spent either at firms or working with clients who are not technical analysts. They are fundamentally oriented investors. They're day traders, but they're not chart guys primarily. And that's my background. So I've always found that if I can't explain it easily to someone else, then I don't want to have it on the chart, because then why am I even doing it, right? So for me, it has to fit those two criteria. So if you think about it, that limits you to things that are relatively straightforward, that are easy to understand, that are simplistic enough. But I think in my opinion, that means they're robust enough to handle different market environments very well. So if I'm looking at a chart, it's relatively simple. It's bar charts. I'll look at candle charts some, but I don't look as much in the short-term environment. If I do, I would look at candle charts, because I think they're a great way to illustrate the short-term trading environment. And when people are getting too excited on one side or the other, I think candles are a great way to illustrate that. But my standard chart is probably a one-year daily price chart with price bars. And then I'll look at moving averages, and I'll usually look at the 50 and 200-day moving averages. And the reason I look at those is because 90 to 95% of investors that bring up a chart will have those two moving averages. So I want to look at what I think everyone else is looking at, because then I can, you know, it's easier to get inside their head and understand why they're making certain decisions. And then the other thing that I would say is pretty much on all of my charts is RSI, the Relative Strength Index, which, if you're not familiar, is just a simple momentum measure, trying to look at how an asset is moving now versus how it normally moves. And so it's a way of identifying outliers. When are things moving too high too fast or too low too fast, and when you might expect some mean reversion in the short term. And if you know, for me, if I look at those things and I look at price, moving average, and RSI, I'm going to have a good definition of what the trend is by seeing where the price is relative to the moving averages, whether they're sloping upwards or downwards. I'll get a sense of where the price is in its mean reversion short term because I'm looking at the RSI. I can identify if it's had an extreme movement recently. And then things like trend lines and Fibonacci lines will help me just quantify support and resistance levels and identify levels at which we might expect buyers or sellers to come into the market. But that's kind of how I would lay out my technical approach.
You are a classically trained musician. Right. Has this helped you analyzing financial markets?
So yeah, it's funny. I've told my father so many times, you know, I have found a way to put my music degree to good use. That was like the big concern. I left the Ohio State University with degrees in music and psychology, and the psychology has come into play every day as an analyst, as a parent, as a manager. That's been great. But music was a little bit of a stretch, but it's so funny how well it somehow prepared me to look at price charts and think about investor sentiment. And I'll tell you why. The first thing is music is very mathematical, if you're not familiar. So, you know, it's all about mathematical relationships and things that sound good to us. Chords and octaves all have a mathematical basis. It's all based on, you know, sound waves and so forth. And you know, I learned about Fibonacci numbers actually as a musician in college, because we talked about that relationship and how it sounds and certain composers that used it. So I remember looking at a chart and someone told me they were using Fibonacci retracements. I was like, oh, great. I actually know something about this. This is great. And it just made sense to me. But there's also very much a mathematical relationship. It's all about, you know, looking at, you know, the movements in notes, note patterns, and knowing what should come next based on the relationships. And that's what you do as a technical analyst is analyze price patterns and try to anticipate what's going to come. It's going to come next. The other thing that's funny is I actually was for a time focused on orchestral conducting, and it's such a challenging and non-financially rewarding life goal that I went into finance, which has been much, much better for us. As an orchestral conducting, specialist, you basically do a lot of score study, which is you are conducting an orchestra of maybe 100 people. And then while you're doing that and you're making eye contact with them, you're trying to get them to do something all together as one voice. You then have to glance down to a score, which is a one page, 14, 15 plus parts that are all listed out, strings, woodwinds, percussion, and so forth. And at a glance, you have to gather a ton of information. You have to look for patterns. You have to figure out where the melody is, where the harmony is, who's playing together, who's playing a part. And it's all about understanding music history and knowing what period that piece is. And based on that, you know what should probably come next based on the combination of notes that you're seeing in front of you. But you have to do it all at a glance. So the first time I looked at a price chart and I saw the price and indicators, and I looked at it and was told to, you know, summarize that into an investment thesis, I was like, somehow I had been doing that as a music major for years. So it was actually hilarious to me. So that idea of looking at things systematically, using a mental checklist to gather all the data quickly and then make a decision, somehow as a musician, that's something that that you have to do. And then finally, you know, it's funny, as a musician, for your listeners that have done music, you know, it's such a creative pursuit, but you have to practice. You have to have a good discipline to become a good musician. It's fun to just do it on the side, but if you really want to become a great musician, you have to put in a lot of work. You have to practice hard and have good routines. And so I think I wish I had better discipline than I do, but any discipline I do have, I feel like has come from my days as a musician and just trying to get better at it.
Similar question. You fly airplanes too.
right.
How, if at all, has this helped you with analyzing financial markets?
So what a funny story about this. It was during a very stressful period when I was at Fidelity and, managing people and, you know, the market environment was very difficult. This was in 2009 to 2010. And so I was looking for a way to distract myself from everything that was going on in the markets and with all those challenges. So I took up, planes. I took up aviation. And if you know anything about it, it's actually a very risky, very challenging, mentally taxing pursuit. So my wife always made fun of me that my stress relief approach was to take on a really stressful hobby. And, you know, in the rearview mirror, probably right. But I didn't listen to her and I went for it anyways. It's funny. So I have about 80 hours in a Cessna 172R, which is a pretty classic training airplane. And I've really, really enjoyed learning to fly. And what happened was when I was first learning, my first flight instructor would actually trade stocks when he wasn't up in the air. He'd do it as a hobby. And so in the air, you know, when you're near the ground, there's a lot to do. But when you're flying around straight and level at 6,000 feet, it's a lot of time to just chat. And so we would often talk about the markets. And what I quickly learned was all the parallels between flying and investing. And it's funny, if you think about it, a lot of terms that we use to describe the markets, things like crashes and takeoff and glide paths and so forth, all come from aviation. They're aviation terms because they're a great way to illustrate, to visualize what's happening with the stock. The other thing that's really funny is before you get the plane in the air, you go through a rigorous checklist, a pre-flight checklist to make sure that everything's working as it should. And that's why, to be honest, most flight issues, most airplane issues don't have anything to do with the plane. The plane's usually working fine. It's human error. It's bad decision making. It's bravado. It's running out of fuel, which is something you should be able to figure out. And so you make sure that the plane is working fine. But that idea of going through checklists has been such a great way to translate into investing. And so when I sit down with my advisor clients, we immediately go through, what's your decision point? All right, you are putting this, you are making this change in your portfolio. Let's talk about how you got to that point and think about the steps that you want to take mentally for those decisions to be good. And that all comes from flying. It all comes from having a consistent checklist. So when I'm looking at a chart, I have a checklist that I go through. What are the, what are the highs and the lows doing? Are we seeing higher highs or lower lows? Okay, that's point one. What key trend lines am I looking at? What are the moving averages doing? What are key support and resistance levels? What's the RSI telling me? And I have this list of about 8 things that you go through. And for junior investors, for people just learning how to look at charts, I force them to write it out by hand. You can tell me whether you're bullish or bearish after you list out the answer to these 8 questions. And that totally comes from flying and having a consistent way of making sure that at the end, you have earned the right to make a really good decision about the airplane or about your position because you've gone through it systematically. So that mental state, that idea of going through things systematically and having the discipline to make good decisions, I think is vital for pilots and vital for traders and investors too.
It's great to hear that I'm not the only one that compares a lot of what I do outside of trading to trading. I mean, I'm not a classically trained musician, and I don't fly airplanes, but I play golf and do a bunch of other things. And my wife is always like, "You compare everything to trading." I'm like, "Well, really, because there's so many comparisons to it." And the ones that you just explained about flying the airplane, I never really thought about that as, you know, terminology coming from flying. And I've talked with actually other pilots on this show. That's the first time that's come up. Great stuff, David, but we're not done yet. I have rapid fire questions next if you're ready for those.
I'm ready.
All right, everybody. Our rapid fire segment is sponsored by Trading Technologies. Access the global markets from virtually anywhere with TT. They are the world's fastest commercially available futures trading platform. And now you can trade cryptocurrency spot and derivative markets side by side. For more information, please visit TradingTechnologies.com. David, first question for you. What trader has influenced your life the most and why?
Ooh, what a great question. There's so many ways that I could answer that. But I would say the main one I would lay out would be Ralph Acampora, who, while technically not a trader, is definitely an investing mentor of mine. And two things that I got from him was to keep it simple and also to keep it light, to not take yourself too seriously.
What was one of the hardest things for you to overcome in trading?
I think the biggest issue I've had, or biggest challenge, is to admit when you're wrong. We as humans don't like to say words like, or phrases like, "I don't know," or "I'm not sure." But as an investor, as a trader, a lot of times you just don't know the answer and you might just not be sure about things. But being familiar, being comfortable with that uncertainty is what allows you to make, I think, better decisions down the road. So for me, it's being comfortable with not always knowing the answer, but just trying to make the best decision that you can.
How has your research process evolved over the years?
Yeah, my research has certainly evolved. And I think for me, it's related to how the markets have changed. So when I started in 2000, the euro had just come out. Decimalization was still kind of in the process of being implemented. And so I think a lot of the changes I've made to my process have been how that environment has changed, how the world has changed around me. So, I mean, one that comes to mind is I remember when I was first looking at the markets, I looked at volume all the time because I found it was a great measure of directional sentiment. And I look at volume very little, if ever, now because I feel like that number means something very different. So I think the way that your toolkit needs to evolve is based on how the market evolves. And if you're not changing your toolkit or reviewing it and updating it, you're missing out.
What is one attribute that you believe every trader should have?
Ooh, attribute. I would say that the number one thing is good discipline. And it's all about developing good routines. And if you don't have the discipline to stick with the routine, you're going to find your returns and your mindset are very inconsistent. And I think being a good trader is about having a consistent process that is, repeatable. And if you find something that just works one time and you don't have the discipline to, keep to a structure over the long time, I think you're going to struggle big time.
Favorite book about trading?
Ooh, really good question. And so many ways to answer that. I'm going to throw out Trader Mind by Steve Ward. As you know from my background, it's behavioral finance and how we think as investors. That's a really good and an easy read talking about your mindset as a trader and how to think about how you think.
Favorite movie about trading?
So many good movies. Trading Places, only because to this day, and I've watched that movie with my wife probably 100 times. And at the end, when they short the market and put the Dukes out of business, my wife still asked me to explain what happened there. So I love that.
What's the best piece of advice that you've received about trading?
Tom DeMark was someone I worked with earlier on in my career, and he at one point told me, always be a student of the markets. And that's been great advice. You never know too much, and you never know everything. You never know enough. There's always another person to talk to, another market to think about, another book to read. And I think this industry, this practice is so cool because you will always be learning.
If you could go back in time and give the younger you a piece of advice, what would it be?
I would say these are great questions, by the way, Anthony. These are killer. I would say to a younger me, don't be afraid to be yourself. And I think a lot of people go through, I think earlier on in my career and when I was with larger firms, I, you know, struggled to develop my own identity because I was so worried about fitting in with the people around me. And I think now, you know, running my own firm now for the last 2.5 years, I've become a lot more comfortable finding my own voice and figuring out my own perspective. And I would say, you know, even if you're at a larger firm, even if you're doing something very particular, don't be afraid to bring yourself to that, your genuine self.
If you had an elevator pitch me your edge in providing research, what would you say?
I help individuals, investors, and advisors to manage risk through market awareness. And we do that by thinking about how we think as an investor and developing better processes for better decisions.
Last question for today, Dave. Favorite thing to do when you're not working?
Oh, we've touched on a number of these. For me, it always comes back to music. So I write music. I play trumpet. I've sung with the Cleveland Orchestra Chorus for the last couple of years. So doing music somewhere in some way, even just listening to it in my headphones, that's my release.
Dave, this was great. Where can people find you on Twitter and give us a website to check out?
Yeah, thanks so much. Thanks again, Anthony. It's a great show, and I've enjoyed listening to some of your episodes, and I'm thrilled to be a part of this one. I'd love to connect with any of your listeners. I'm on Twitter at dkellercmt, and then my website's marketmisbehavior.com, and I have a blog on there where we think about behavioral psychology and investing and lots of themes to dig through.
Dave, this was awesome. Thank you so much for coming on Futures Radio Show today.
Cheers, Anthony. Good to speak with you.
Thank you for listening to Futures Radio Show. If you have any questions or comments for myself or my guests, please visit futuresradioshow.com and sign up to be a premium member for free. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes.